Perk Mem Mem Beis. We did Mem Aleph and Mem Gimel, but we're going back to Mem Beis now. So here starts the Mizmorim that were written for the Bnei Korach. L'Mesech Maskil L'Bnei Korach. There's a big question of what a Maskil means. If Maskil means like for the wise men, but either way, this is written either by or for the Bnei Korach, the sons of Korach. Who are the sons of Korach? So we all know that Korach and his entire family was killed by being swallowed up into the earth. In fact, Korach had both punishments. He was burned up by the fire that came out from the flaming pans, and then was swallowed up by the earth. The Bnei Korach, lo mesu, says the Pasuk in Pinchas, they never died.
They were a ledge?
Yeah, whatever that means. It was like a ledge that stuck out for them. They were able to do tshuva, whatever it is. Now, there clearly are descendants of Korach. In fact, anybody by the name of Horowitz, if they are Levium, are most likely from the family of Bnei Korach.
What?
Horowitz is related to Shlach HaKadosh. They all come from the Shlach HaKadosh, and Shlach HaKadosh comes from Korach. He was able to trace his lineage all the way back to Shmuel HaNavi, and Shmuel HaNavi definitely came from Korach. That's a medrash. So someone of these Bnei Korach ended up having a child. Maybe all of them did, right? And anyone who's named Horowitz has shaykhs to Korach. So, for example, the wedding that I was at last night, yeah, Victor Horowitz. Eitan Horowitz. Eitan Horowitz's son. Well, he went to Levi Torah with you.
Eitan's son, right.
So I went to his wedding last night. So he is a grandson of the Shlach HaKadosh. A great, whatever it is of that. Yeah, that makes sense. Any Horowitz is related if they're living him in some way, shape, or form. So that's the idea behind it. Maskil could mean that it stirs the mind, it gets them used to it, whatever it is, somehow.
Most of Rashi says it's basically a translator for the Navi. The Navi had his Ruach HaKodesh, and like in the midst of his like
Kol Makshav Maskil Al Yedei Miturgaman Nam Arshaya Navi Mamid Turgaman Lefanav Kshiruach Nevuah Balo. He told the Nevuah to the translator, and the translator would tell it over. So that's interesting. That's an interesting line. Anyway, but that is that. He looked up. That was that. That was the difference between them. So the Bnei Korach gave a lot of thought whether or not to rise up against Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the Maskil. They were very wise about what they should do. If we rise up against them, things could go really bad, they said. But if not, right, whatever it is. But in the end, they decided they're going to stand up by Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, if the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu is not true, there's no basis for honoring your father. So in other words, they're looking at it, they're like, should we do keep it up the aim, or should we honor Moshe Rabbeinu? Well, if we don't honor Moshe Rabbeinu, we might as well not keep it up the aim. They decided to honor Moshe Rabbeinu. Obviously, they were right.
Well, yeah. I'm saying, if you have to honor your Rebbe or your father,
Your Rebbe comes first for that reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for that exact reason. But most of it is even more so because he gave us this over in the first place. And then it says, Ka'ayol ta'arog afikei mayim, ke'nashi sarog elach elokim. I don't know how many people, when they sing this song, actually say it correctly. I would think that they usually do the word ke'ayol, right, like a ram. But it's not. Ke'ayol, like a deer, pants upon the water brooks. So too my soul pines for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the idea like that. In other words, just like the same urgency that the deer goes to water in order to drink, so too I feel that urgency as well, right? That's the idea behind it. Otherwise, it, just like it feels urgent that it has to run away from a predator so it runs into the water to lose its scent, so do I feel that way for HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. That's the idea behind it. We're sitting there waiting for the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That also is explained when it comes to water. It could be that the water over here, Al-Tikei Mayim, is referring to, obviously, Tyra, right? The Tyra that the people had and how they were able to go through. It's interesting. It's a question whether the Ayol is referring to the male or the female. Ayol is usually the male, and if you remember from Parakov Bays, you mentioned there was something called the Ayala. Both of them are an Ayol. They're deer, female and male deer. But nonetheless, the words are a little bit different, obviously. The male cries about the troubles of others, that they have no water, and tries to bring the water down. The female cries out because it can't give birth properly. That's what ends up happening over here. So it's interesting. Look at this Medrash. The Zohar writes about this and says, this is the Ayala Shachar. What does this mean? In a time of distress, when she feels the need for food for herself and all other creatures, she goes far away, right, and brings back provisions. But she doesn't eat, this is the Ayala, she doesn't eat until everyone else, all the other animals, have gotten their food. And only then does she eat. By that time, it's already morning, the night has already passed, and that's when that's why she's called the Ayelet HaShachar. So to when they need rain, they go up to her, she davens in a private spot, the Ayala davens in a private spot, and then the rain comes, and everything comes through after she bleats again and again and again. And then the crazy one, when she's pregnant and needs to give birth, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mazmin for her a snake that bites her in the area of the womb, which is very, very narrow. And because of that, it's almost like, what do they call it? you know, I had the same problem last time, I forgot what the word is, anesthesia, right? It's like an anesthetic. And she's able to give birth from the snake bite.
Between a tsi and ayal?
Tsi is a gazelle. It's a little bit smaller and a little more whatever it is. Yeah, I don't think anybody's... The difference between a gazelle and a deer is the horns. I mean, effect on the body structure, but the deer horns are like brick. Yeah, that's what everybody thinks, but it's not. It's a gazelle. Okay. It's like the short-horned pronghorn type of things. Actually, a pronghorn, it might be a deer. Anyway, so that's that. That's the idea behind it. So too, right, the Jewish people are going to be redeemed after a snake bite, after the Yisurin of Ikvas and Meshicha, what's going to be over there, right? The water stands for Torah and Das, so we're going to get Torah and Das, etc., and stuff like that. And obviously, the Ayol wants, like, something wild water and stuff like that. That's what it's going. Someone My soul thirsts for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the living God. When will I come and I will see the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When will I be Zocha to be able to see it? Chazal tell us that although back in the day we used to go up to Yerushalayim for the three regalim and used to be for there, in the future we're going to go up for Rosh Chodesh as well as for Shabbos as well. We'll be able to go up to Yerushalayim on Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos. Now, if Yerushalayim extends and it becomes this huge area, then it makes sense that it will be that way. But it's an interesting little thing. Also, Penei Hashem, the face of God, usually refers to the countenance, the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that emanates forth from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I will just tell you, Yo'er Hashem Panav Eilecha, Hashem lights up his face to you, Vichuneka. It's a reference to that idea over here. Okay, the Zohar says it as well, that Moshe Rabbeinu is referenced over here because his face radiated a light that came from it. Ha'isali Dimasi Lechem Yomam V'layla, my tears have been my bread day and night. Amor Eilecha Yomei Eilecha, when the nations say about me, where is your God? I cried often as often as I possibly could, and they became my meals because they were taunting me and saying, where is your God? You believe in your God, right? Well, where's your God? Where's your God helping you? Why isn't he helping you now? So that's what I ended up doing. Ela Eskarab Eshbachal Ainashi. These I remember, and I pour out my soul to you in tears. When I go and I pass by all the numbers of people, Adadim Ad Beis Elokim, I lead them until the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the base of with a singing voice and thanksgiving, a multitude of celebration. Right? That's what I end up doing over here. There's no problem with that whatsoever. This idea of David HaMelech, it could be in one of two ways. It could be that when he saw everybody doing all these bad things, right, and the pilgrimages stopped to the Mishkan at the time, because David HaMelech never saw the Beit HaMikdash, it reminded him of what was in the past when everybody used to go up together, and now they're no longer doing it. So David HaMelech is crying about such a thing.
Yeah,
it could be that he's crying about the future, that he sees in the future there won't be a Beis HaMikdash and people won't be able to do Aliyah L'Regel.
Learn the nugget that people were that bad in the time of David.
We don't see that by David HaMelech. Perhaps it was a year when people didn't go up as much. Whatever it is. Remember, there were 3 years of plague. So maybe during those years people didn't go up and he cried. How could it be that nobody's coming up? And they had a good excuse.
Exactly.
But he's still saying, like, oh wow, like I can't believe I remember what it was like and it's not like this anymore. Hoping that it won't remain that way. Now, I will tell you, Ela Ezra is a famous piyut that we say on Tisha B'Av and some say on Yom Kippur as well, right, regarding the Asaruge Malchus, that it references the Asaruge Malchus. I remember these great tzaddikim, the Eshbakal Lainapshi, and I pour out my soul with crying. That's the idea behind it. Now, that's the famous line. It's called Medrash Ela Ezkara. There's a medrash about the Asaruge Malchus called Medrash Ela Ezkara. It's based on this line of David HaMelech over here, and really based on Yirmi as well. There is some cool stuff, though. Every time you took a step going up to Yerushalayim, it would be a Malach was created. And there's another thing. In the past, I went up to Yerushalayim along well-kept roads, but now I have to go through the thickets to stay away from people who are going to argue with me or do things like that. In the past, there were trees and boughs over my head, but now I'm at the mercy of the sun. The trees were cut down. I remember these things, says David HaMelech, and I would bring it with Hamun Chogeg, but now we have to go up in stealth and come down in stealth. It's likely that's not talking about David HaMelech in his time, but rather referring to another time. We're talking about the people in another way. That's a very good possibility. Then he says, in Pasuk Why would you cast my soul down and let my moaning overcome me? Because I wait for his deliverance. I wait for everything over here. Now, again, this is referring to you knock me down, right? And I start moaning. He's a reference again to the three regalim when they're no longer going up and doing what they're supposed to do. He's hoping that they can finally do tshuva, and that's hochili lelo kim. I will hope to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, pray that I will end up getting thanks, etc. Okay, alai nafshi sishokhov. My soul is cast down from before me. Alkin is korcham eretz yad v'chamonin. Therefore, I remember you from the land of the Jordan River, in other words, the Trans-Jordan area on the east side, which is now known as Jordan. Good name. The Harmonim and Harmon, right, the mountains, Mehar Mitzor, from the mountains of Mitzor as well. That's where all the people used to come from. It wasn't just the people around Yerushalayim who did, you know, who did Aliyah Lerego. It was everybody who did it. Everybody was doing Aliyah Lerego. It was just a normal thing for everyone to do. To Omel Tom, Kori Lekino, Kol Tinerecha. The depths call to the other depths, according to the sound of all your cataracts, of your channels, etc. They hear all that. Kol Mishbrach, Megalech, Aliyah Varu. All of your breakings and waves, I don't know what a good word. You know, when the waves break against the sand, whatever they're called, yeah. So those, Aliyah Baruch, they go over me. So David Melech is reminded here by the landscape of Eretz Yisrael. He said, we're passing through the hills, going to Yerushalayim, he would hear the roaring of the water, right, going in the channels below. And he was saying, this is an unbelievable land in everything they have.
Amen.
For you
to see the street.
I did, as I looked up. Come on, it was right there. Okay, very, very good. By the way, so we have that. For those on the who are listening, is machlokas whether you should answer Amen or not, but I probably should have paused it for that. Dude, you definitely could, but they're not listening live. So, there's a big question on that. I probably should have. All right, anyway, it does make a difference. I've heard Rabbans make brachos on CDs and not be mocked on it, so might as well. I've never heard Rabbi Victor Miller do it, though, so that it does tell you something. He probably felt that it was us here to be able to put it on, because he can't erase it, can't whatever it is, his conscience. All right, anyway. Anyway, he thinks that Eretz Yisrael should get, with the perfect timing right now, that Eretz Yisrael is praised of the fact that they get rainwater. Right? Instead of river water. Now, river water is good, right? But it's become dirty, there's fish inside there, it gets a little bit disgusting, right? That gets a little bit bad. The rainwater is beautiful and clean. And everything is unbelievably clean because it comes up from up above, right? Clean as well. If you took a cup out, you took a cup of it and you could drink it, right? Oh, there's no question. Well, not as clean as our filtered water. But nonetheless, it's very good water, especially for back then. That's that. There's an interesting thing, the cyclic process of rain is one of the things whose process goes from one end of the earth to the other. It is interesting, right? The amount of evaporation that might happen in this area right over here could cause rain all the way in Thailand. That's a possibility, that the rain won't come down here, it'll come down over there. That's one of the most unbelievable things. The Gemara calls it the sound of rain. It's not the sound of rain, but really the cycle, the process of rain is something that's absolutely unbelievable. And that's going to mean tomel tom kore. Yeah.
Now, we could use it for mitzvah. Not as a mitzvah, but as the Caleb. Like if you collect enough.
Yeah, but that's not. I mean, that could be true by any water. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but no, I think that's going to be different. I think anyway. But that's what he's saying. He's calling it. And Dovin Mel said, my sorrows were like pools of water that were filled with all this stuff, and it's just too much for me. And the waves over here, by the way, and the Mishparech are all referring to the Rashayim that come up against me that try to destroy me. Whenever you see the word waves used in a Gadat of Gemaras, it refers to the Rashayim trying to destroy us, like the Rabba Barachana Gemaras and Baba Bas. When it mentions coming up to it soon, don't worry, it's soon.
Vastra,
yeah, like a year. So either way, so when it refers to the waters, or Avrahana saw in the sea, and Rabbi Yochanan saw in the sea, Rabbi Eliezer saw in the sea, and the waves are coming, and the waves are always referring to the Rishayim trying to destroy the Jews. That's what it's referring to. The ship is the Jewish nation, the waters are Gullus, and the waves are the Goyim trying to destroy us. During the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends out his kindness. Night, you have to sing with me, Tefillah El Chayoi, right? As a Tefillah to the living God. Now, listen to this, by the way. You are required to be able to sing at night. It's a requirement to make sure that you... Sorry. Perfect timing.
Jeez, I guess.
I did not even, right? You parked right here. It's unbelievable. But either way, Tefillah El Chayoi, we're supposed to sing a little bit at night. We're supposed to learn at night. Now, back in the day, there were akbadas in saying Tanakh at night, right? Pure Tanakh, meaning learning Pshat, etc., which is why I only do Midrashim at night. But there is a Hakpada about learning Tanakh at night.
Yeah,
it is brought down by that. And that's why you got to do a little bit extra. Once you start putting Pirushim inside there, then it becomes you could do something at night itself. I'm sorry?
Friday night is okay, is an exception to the rule.
That makes sense.
And Pesach night is known as
for sure is okay. Anyway, but that's that. Learning at night, you get a chesed bayom. You get a little bit of chesed. Meaning, somebody who learns at night is going to be a little bit more irritable the next day because you didn't sleep enough or whatever it is, right?
That's why I'm the way I am every day.
I understand that. Don't blame it on learning. But either way, regardless, right? You're going to be a little more irritable during the day. So the pshat is chesed el kolayom. You get a little bit of a chutzal chesed that comes to you that helps somebody who learned at night. That's what was happening. Omele el sali. I say to God, my rock, lamash chatan. Remember, the reason why he's known as Sela, as the rock, is because it is something that you can rely on. That's what it means. You know, it's something that won't move, so to speak. Lamash chatan. So I say to God, my rock, he's normally my salvation. Why do you forget me? Lamakodra elech belachat soyev. Why do I stand there in mourning, right? MOURNING, right? When the enemy is oppressing me, why have you forgotten me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Normally I can rely on you like this, and now all of a sudden you're gone. But Retzach Bas Mosai, it's like murder in my bones. Kherfuni Tzoroi, all my enemies taunt me, it makes me feel disgusting. Barmei like Kol Yom, they say to me all day long, Ayei Elohecha, where is your God? Where is your God? The same taunt that they set up above, right? What was the wording that we set up above? It was, here we go. Kol Yom, Ayei Elohecha, on Pasuk Dalet. Same thing over here. What's going on over here, right? It's an interesting Gemara. There was a Jew and a non-Jew were walking together, an Arab merchant were walking together, and the Jew was outpacing the Arab merchant, right? Because we all know we're tremendous marathon runners, better than the Kenyans, obviously, right?
The Kenyans are
Arabs. I guess, right, we're still better than the Arabs, that's right. So, you know what?
I mean that as a...
No, it's fine. It's perfectly fine. Thank you, Benjamin.
Thanks for...
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. Anyway, regardless, so it was so funny. The Gemara says that the Jew was too fast for the Arab to follow, right? So what did the Arab do? The Arab said, do you remember your Beit HaMikdash? And the Jew sighed, and then he couldn't catch up to the Arab itself. Now, how have I, we were on that level, to be able to have that sadness that comes to us whenever we mention the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed? I have a hard enough time on Tisha B'Av being able to get myself ready for doing things like this. But nonetheless, that's it in order to get him down. And then the third time we see this line, Matish Tokachi Napshi, like casting down my soul, Matami Aloi, Ochilu Lukin, and you're moaning, this moaning, why should it be with me? I pray for God, right, that I should think and I should have a salvation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and take care of me, that I should be humbled and have sorrow, etc. And again, three times we saw these words, three times we see the word, that I hope for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even though three times I was knocked down, nonetheless, I hope that I'm still going to be able to bring myself back and everything will be there. Now, this, he talks about, we already did this, Mem Gimel, last week, talked about getting himself out away from the enemies themselves and going through. Mem Dalet continues to Lamnatseach with Bnei Korach Maskil. Another Lamnatseach attributed to the Bnei Korach or possibly written about the Bnei Korach. Now, this is going to be about Golos. The problems that we have with Golos itself, and that we should never lose hope no matter where we are. Maskil here would mean it's like a wake-up call. Wake yourself up, enlighten yourself, and realize why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was allowing this to happen. Elokim Balzinu Shamanu, we heard with our ears, Avosinu Sipulanu, and our fathers told this over to us. Paul Pa'alta Bimeim Bimekadim, all the great works that you have done in the days of old. We don't see any miracles like that nowadays. We see nothing like it. But unless we've heard about everything you've done, Kriyas Yamsuf and the Yardin and everything like that, what happened in Canaan. So it's got to be true. A father wouldn't lie to his son, right? So if a father is telling his son what happened in the days of old, we know this is a true story.
Yeah, but shouldn't every generation get like their own little
playing telephone, so to speak. In order for that to happen, I think even then, like, you see, like, things are different as times go on. Like, oh man, I remember, like, our fathers could say, like, 67, we saw 67. That's a good call, right? In 73, the Yom Kippur War, like, they saw tremendous miracles that we have not been zocher to. We didn't see that in operation, you know, maybe Desert Storm would be different, or 81 when we destroyed that. 91, yeah, thank you. Wait, 81.
81 was destroying Iraq.
Iraq, that's what I mean. Yeah, 81. 91, 92, right, it's Desert Storm. Maybe, but like, what can you say about 2003, right? There's no, we don't see those miracles the same way.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe that's what you can tell over.
Say stories.
Yeah, maybe you could say over something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a reason for that. I don't have a reason for it. My assumption is that whether or not, remember we said this thing about Ledovid Mizmor, Mizmor Ledovid? Mizmor Ledovid is when first he got the song in his head and then he had Ruach HaKodesh to say it. Ledovid Mizmor is when he got Ruach HaKodesh first. So I'm thinking it's the same thing for B'nai Korach Maskil. If it's Maskil with B'nai Korach, then the same way that he thought of the song and then they had Nebuah or some type of Ruach HaKodesh. And here it's Ruach HaKodesh before they actually sing the song itself. There's a mashal. A rich man prepared a wedding gift for his eldest son on the occasion of his marriage. At the same time, he put a gift away for his second son because he said, who knows what's going to be, right? When I get older, I don't know if I'm going to have it. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should have done that for us. Granted, you gave the gift to your oldest son back then, right? The miracle for them back then. But you for sure saved us a gift at that time. Even if you don't have, Chas V'Shalom, the ability to do so now, at least that is something, right? There should be something.
He's already made the promise that we'd have another.
That we're going to have something. And that's what we're saying. We should give it to us now. You drove out with your hand all the enemies. You planted them, right, and broke the nations, but Shalkaim, and you cast them out. Something is a reference to the Girgashi. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looks like there's a little bit of a leak. The Girgashi, it happens to be that they were the ones who ran away before anything happened, right? They got themselves out, and they moved themselves out before anything bad could happen to them. So the Girgashi could be what it's referring to over here. Some read that Shalachim, as they were put to the sword, that they perished by the sword, not that they were sent out. But the point is that it was you yourself with your hand. That's how you got rid of all the nations over there, meaning it was supernatural. It was not through natural causes, although in theory, I guess we could answer how the Jordan River splitting or the Kriyas Yamsu could be explained through a wind or whatever it is. I guess in theory it could be explained that way. Belikovsky did that famously, the Russian Jewish, of course, the scientist, whatever you want to call him. I forgot what they call him, but he's not. This was supernatural in that way. And Torah is you destroyed the people because they were evil. Not that you did evil to them, but you caused them to break because of their evil. They're not going to inherit the land through their own sword. It's not their arm that will be able to save them. Rather, your right hand and your arm and the light of your countenance, when you were favorable to them. That's the idea behind it. Now, again, if you want to win a war, you need weapons, you need warriors, you need people to be out there, right? You need to have stuff like that. Our victory was not due to those types of things. It's rather what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us and how that happened for us. That's the idea behind it. One example would be Sichon. Sichon was so tall, according to the Medrash, that when he sat down on the wall of his fortress, his legs reached the ground. It was so huge. And we all know Og being this huge giant. And nonetheless, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to defeat them both. They were talking about giants of unbelievable stature, and they did not have the weapons that we have nowadays. How was he able to do such a thing? Try to tell me that the whole Medrash of Moshe Rabbeinu hitting Og in the leg is also difficult to understand. Why wouldn't he have had armor all around his leg? No, I'm saying, in all seriousness. Well,
no, I would explain it by saying it's a Medrash.
No, but either way, he killed him, right? Killed him. But it seems to indicate that he hit him in the leg in order for it to be. So
But that could just be, explanation. He couldn't have actually been the size of a mountain.
I don't mean it that way. But still, nonetheless, he hit him in the leg. But there should have been armor on the leg.
Why?
There should have been armor on there. Everybody covered themselves with armor to make sure they wouldn't get hit, especially if you knew that they could only reach that high. You know what I'm saying? All the way down, for sure. And you'd have bulwarks.
If he really was a million feet tall, why would he need any armor at all? Someone's going to throw a toothpick at him? What's going to happen to him?
That's clear. There wouldn't be anything like that. And he couldn't have been... So the only way to understand a person being that tall is for him to be that wide. You'd have to have him be as wide as a mountain in order for that to be. Sort of like... You'd have to be freakishly fat. Freakishly fat, not just fat.
I kind of just imagine in armor.
No, put it this way. If a normal 6-foot person, right, is healthy at 175 pounds, let's say, right? A 12-foot person would have to be 8 times that weight in order for him to survive, to be healthy in a human form. Now, it is possible there's an Ibn Ezra out there that says that Og was a freak, that he had freakishly short arms, right, and very, very huge thighs.
He was a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Which is awesome, by the way. Yeah, I did say, well, as soon as I saw that him in Ezra, it is possible. There's a Metro Shrava that also seems to say the same thing, that he was a freak of nature. Tom Sofer says he looked weird. And that makes sense, because you can't have a person that looks like a rhinoceros. You just can't be. It has to be something weird. Your blood can't flow the way. Think about it. Every seven-footer has foot problems.
No, I understand that. I'm saying, like, but also, at the same time, we know that they lived a freakishly long age that we don't live to either. So, like...
You're right.
So but you can't automatically say this because our blood flow eventually stops off.
Age doesn't bother me as much as size does. Every single creature that's that big has a heart that's huge, absolutely huge.
Okay.
That heart wouldn't fit into a human body unless he was a freak of nature. It's just impossible. You can't pump that blood. That's why really tall people have problems with their feet and a problem with their fingers. Like, think of every center in the NBA after 4 or 5 years. Lou Gold, Jordan Murison, all those guys, Sean Bradley. They can't stay that way.
Right, but part of it is also they're athletes, so the wear and tear on their knees.
I'm not even talking about the knees. The knees, you're 100% right. I'm talking about the foot. Joakim Noah keeps having that plantar fasciitis. He had it for 2 years in a row. It's all because you can't get the same blood flow as you would by a normal human being.
It's kind of fresh air. It's related to blood.
It isn't at the same time, because once you're overcompensating, then you end up doing something else, like your fingers become a little bit colder. There's weird stuff with that. So yeah, that's why, physically speaking, of course a Kutschbuckle could do anything. Of course, in theory, I guess Og could have been this massive mountain of a juggernaut type of guy. But regardless, the way that we see it, it's not the way. I'm surprised. It's that we can't think of Moshe Rabbeinu just fighting a guy his size, so to speak. We have to think of him. Og was definitely huge in some way, and miracles happened that allowed Moshe to be able to beat him and see him.
The Torah is that Moshe himself fought the battle, doesn't it?
Kibiyadcha nasati oso is the wording.
Yeah,
that could very well be the army.
As the messenger of the Jews.
Right. We only have it through Midrashim that Moshe Rabbeinu fought him, and obviously the Gemara Brachos is
Moshe
one of them.
Moshe is also 119 and a half.
Yeah, easily. No, 119 and 3 months, because he was an Elul in Tishrei.
Right. Wait, no, if it was Elul, then it was a half, because he was born out of
Elul. Oh, there. Very good. Yeah, it was 6 months. Yeah. 119 and a half. He's old. All right, anyway. Akko Malki Elohim, you are my king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tzave Yeshua Yaakov, the famous song. Tzave, Tzave, right?
Yep.
Command for the salvation of Yaakov Avinu. Promise us that Yaakov Avinu will be saved. I always wondered, by the way, there's a famous line that Yaakov Avinu took away the vugs from Eliyahu HaNavi and put it in him to guarantee that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to bring him back. It will bring back the gula. Why wasn't it here? Tzave Yeshua's Yaakov, there should be an extra vug here. It's not here. There are 5 other places where it says it. Unfortunately, it's not here. And also, the Atum Malki Elohim Tzavi Yeshua Yaakov, the command of deliverance. David HaMelech heard this directly, says the Medrash, from Achia Shiloni, who heard it from his Rebbe, heard it from his, that there was a Mesorah, that Tzavi Yeshua Yaakov is how you're supposed to word it, and he brought that down over there. The Chatzarinu Nageach, through you, we push down our enemies. Bishulchan Avuz Kamenu, in your name, or through your name, we tread upon those who come up against us. The Cha is the Galatra of 22. That stands for the 22 letters of the Torah itself, that because of the schus of the Torah that we learn, we're able to subdue all of the enemies that come up against us. I don't trust in my bow. It's not my sword that's going to be able to save me. That's not what's going to happen. Because you are going to save us from our enemies and from those who are our adversaries, you're going to, I guess, put them to shame and knock them down and frustrate their plans. In God, we praise all the Elam Shilcha L'Olam Nodisela. We will thank your name forever and ever. You're going to cast us off and you allow us to be, but you have cast us off a little bit in Gullus. You have caused us to be confused. You don't seem to go out in our hosts fighting. We still believe that you can, but we don't see it in our armies. We don't see it in the same way that we did back then. You made us turn back from our enemies. And our enemies started to plunder us and spoil us and take everything from us. Right? And that's the idea behind it. This is the exile to the worry. In another type of explanation, you could say that the Jews are all worried of what's going to be when the nations fight each other. Usually when you have two nations fight each other, the Jews are pitted in the middle and they're the ones who are blamed. Yeah. everybody blames us. So that's the idea behind it. You got to be careful with that. You have given us over to be like sheep that are going to be eaten. What do? They scatter us here, there, and everywhere, bringing us in all different places. Not only that, but you sell your nation as if to not gain anything at all. It's if you're giving us away to the other nations without even selling us whatsoever. You don't even want money for us, right? It's an abandonment completely. I've always thought that there is nothing more embarrassing than a baseball player, a basketball player being traded from one team to the other without getting anything in return. We're basically like the team is paying your salary in order for you to leave the team.
Well, it's just salary cap.
But it's unbelievable. They're willing to pay you $18 million to not play.
Well,
I can't even imagine how embarrassing that is to a player. I know they've done it. Tons of players have had that happen.
They're also getting $18 million.
They're fine because they made the money off it. But these guys, unbelievable. How embarrassing is that? I mean, what was it? Alfonso Soriano, right? Who they paid to just go? Just get out of there? The player in the Bulls.
Boozer.
That's right. They just paid him to get out. It's unbelievable. It's like $15 million they paid him to leave. It's unreal that they're willing to do that. But that's the idea behind it. They didn't set a high price or anything like that. Some say this is a reference to Achashverosh and Haman, right? Achashverosh said to Haman, right, after Haman said, I'll pay you 10,000 shekel kesef for you to be able to, you know, to destroy the Jews. Achashverosh said, keep the money. I'll do it anyway. Right? I don't even want the money. I'm willing to destroy the Jews from it. That's below Hone, and that's the reference over here. Of course, this also could be referring to the Asar Ruge Malchus, which we mentioned in the last Parak Mem Beis, right, where no ransom was enough to be able to ransom them out. They would not take any money in order to ransom them. Simenu Kherpa L'Shchaninu, you allowed us to be a mockery to all of our neighbors, Lagba Kelsu Elsenu, a mockery and scorn to all those around us. Simenu Mashal B'Goyim, you made us a word among the Goyim, Minoyid Rosh Bala Umin. People like shook their heads at us among all the nations, like, oh yeah, the Jews, you don't want to be like them. That's what we became. We became like, oh, the Jews, right? Kol yom kli mosi negdi, all day long my shame is opposite me, aboshes panayki sofni, and it covers me up and I can't deal with me. Kol makoreif magadeif, from the noise of those degrading and blaspheming me, even evil misna came from the enemies and the avenger. And that again is a continuation of the Moscow Nekorah from Mendez, that everything's in Gullus. It's going to be so bad how the enemies are coming up against us. All this came against us, right? But we did not forget you. We did not lie about your bris. Now, clearly, the bris over here is referring to the bris milah. That no matter what, we kept your bris milah. We kept giving our children bris milahs, even if it was difficult, even if it was went against the government. We did everything we could in order to give a bris milah. They were willing to do so.
They didn't do it in time of Yael.
I don't remember Yael. Why Yael?
No, Devorah.
The same Devorah person, same time.
Oh, right, yeah.
Why?
Yael and Devorah, what? That's what it says. That
Shekamti in the Yisrael.
No, I don't know the word. I saw this in the Zohar. It's a Brishit. The reason that the salvation had come through women during that time, because the Jews were lax in the midst of the Mila, so only the women.
That's amazing.
Were
that's
able amazing. To.
I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's really good. There were times. There obviously 50 years ago in Russia, nobody gave their kids Bris Milas. They couldn't. I mean, the only the really 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 crazy people, it. Right? They didn't. And that's our Stalin, Russia.
Yeah.
Stalin,
Russia. Well, now you and I know that they had it.
Yeah, they had it when they were older.
Remember it?
They told me. Yeah, well, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it again. But either way, regardless. But that's the idea behind it. We never lied about your prayers. Okay, there were times where we didn't do it, but nonetheless, it's interesting. Also, the word "tashem" is used somewhere around here. Tashem, that the land will be desolate. Tashem. No. Tashem. Torah Shabbos Milat in Parak Mem Zion in. Voracious. Toshain is Torah Shabbos Milo. Those are the three things we have to eat. Our heart has not been turned back, nor have our steps turned back from your path. We have not strayed from where you are. The Yitzhak is always with us in that way. It's never going to be lost. It's going to endure, so to speak, for a very long time. And even when you crush us in a place where there are jackals, now that could be literal jackals, you know, in areas where, you know, we're lost in the middle of the desert and the wolves and jackals, etc., all around. Jackals are crazy creatures, by the way. They're not as strong as wolves are, but they're wily, and they're definitely worse than coyotes in that way. You always have to worry. If you have a choice between a hyena and a jackal, I probably would still choose the jackal, but both can crush bones with their teeth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're both extremely strong. From the Gemara Pesachim Ben Tesh. Yeah, I don't know. It's a possibility, but I haven't found in it. But this, the jackal was extremely
dangerous.
They were going to
chop on people.
You know the book, Life of Pi? I think that's what it is. Yeah, I like the book. I know there's a movie that came out. I wasn't Zocha to see the movie. But the book was an amazing book. And it talks about hyenas in there. Jackals are similar to hyenas in that way. Hyenas are some of the scariest creatures in the world. You don't want to be found anywhere near them.
In Robert's time, I saw jackals all the time.
Did you?
They're at night. You can hear them. They sound like Arab ladder.
Wow, let's just I definitely hear you. It is. That's what they are. Anyway, it also could refer to the other nations themselves. It could refer to the Babylonian nation, the Gullus Babel as well, where they worshipped the jackal idol. I don't know what idol that is exactly.
The Egyptians
definitely be. He says the Babylonians.
The Egyptians had the head of the jackal when they died, the first god.
They definitely did. That was one thing that they had. There's no question about that. I don't know what Babel did.
Get a body of a person.
Look up right now. Babel
ruled Egypt for a while.
No, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Not at the same
time. The Persians ruled Egypt for a while.
So maybe they took on that guy.
There was a brain drain. They brought all the priests and all the artists and all those people to Persia.
Persia is not exactly Babylonia, though. You know what I'm saying? It's a different nation. No, it's a different nation. Totally different nation. The Mesopotamians are different from the Persians. And they would hate it if you said that. Like, Iraq, Iran, come on. Yeah. Same guys.
They go crazy.
Yeah. I would be offended.
At least this year.
Either way, regardless. That's the religion. Im shakachnu shem Elokeinu. If we had forgotten the name of God, Benifros Kapir Lelzor, and we had spread out our hands to a strange God, you would know this God, because you know all the secrets of our hearts. So obviously we didn't do that, or else you would have said something. So we didn't do that. We have been killed for you all day long. We've been considered like sheep being sent to slaughter. A version of this pasuk is what we say in our Tachnun on Mondays and Thursdays. We don't say it exactly, but this is a reference to Hannah and her seven sons that were willing to kill themselves. A reference to people who are willing to submit their child to get bris milah, even though it's possible their kid will die from it. Tell me the chachamim that give up their lives for their Torah learning and everything that they have.
There was a constellation in Babylonia referred to as a jackal, and the name of this constellation was Anu.
Anubis
was the Egyptian guy. Maybe there was some sort of cross
connection. You're right. That's good. Anu. All right. So more than that, it goes through and everything like that. Now, bris milah, obviously, we already talked about before, so we don't need to. He quotes down, whoever wrote this up together said in World War II, there's a story that sort of makes this clear. It took place during World War II in one of the death camps where the accursed embodiments of evil, the Germans, assembled millions of our people for incineration. A mother held up her newborn infant son who had not been brought into the covenant of Abraham, and turning to another Jew said, "Here, circumcise this child, for I want him to die as a proper Jew." Right there and then, in the light cast by the flames of death, right before they were thrown into the fires, the flames, the child was circumcised. I don't want to imagine how they did it, but they circumcised the child and they died, and that's the line behind it. I would assume somebody survives. Either way, the Sefer Hasidim says when a Jew is ridiculed for performing the mitzvah and he protests at the insults, right, that are being whatever, it's like he's been killed sanctifying the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He stands up there and he says, no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it is, right, that's the idea behind it. Ura, Lamatiz Hashem, wake up, why do you sleep, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Akitza, arouse yourself, don't cast this off forever over here. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not sleeping. But why do you make it appear as if you're sleeping, as if you have nothing to do with this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Don't allow it to be that way. Wake yourself up. Whatever the anthropomorphism of whatever sleep refers to when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't allow that to be anymore. It's time for you to be with us the entire time, which I'm sure they felt during the Holocaust. Why do you hide your face? Forgetting our affliction and all of our oppression. You grind our souls down to the dust. Our belly, our stomach, cleaves to the earth itself, and we can't even get up. We can't pick ourselves up off the ground. Get up and save us. And save us, redeem us for your chesed, in order for you to be good. So this is interesting over here. A man was traveling with his son from city to city. By the time he went half the distance, the child grew tired and said, Father, Father, when will we reach the city? The father answered, Wait, the time will come when we will enter the city. He walked a bit more, and the son again cried out, When will we reach the city? I'm too exhausted already. The reply came, Wait a little bit more, and we'll come to the city. This went for the entire journey until last they arrived. My son, let this be your sign. When you reach the cemetery, that's when you know the city is nearby. That's all you know. So the pshat is that there will be tremendous amount of death right before the Ikvah Sin of Mashiach. You'd think that that would have been the Holocaust. You'd think that that would have been
it.
What?
Now that it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you'd hope that that was the last one, and that now we're just waiting for something else. But clearly that wasn't the last thing that we needed. Hopefully we don't need anything that's that bad. But that's the end of Mem Dalet over here. Now we're on Mem Hey. Now it gets a little bit better. The B'nai Korach are now Shoshanim. Now, Shoshanim is a reference to Klal Yisrael. We are roses among the thorns, being the other nations of the world. Two times we're known as Shoshanim. We're known as Shoshanas Yaakov, that we say at the end of Purim, after reading the Megillah. You guys did that? Started to do that as well?
Yeah.
Shoshanas Yaakov. And also in Ma'os Tzur, Shoshanim Nasa, Nasa, Shoshanim, etc. No, but it's a line that references Klal Yisrael. There's no question. Shoshanim all over the place. Shoshanim is referring to the good Jews. And the point is that when we're doing well, then we're roses. When we're doing badly, then the rose petals falls off and we're just a bunch of thorns. Right? That's the idea behind it over here. Now, Maskil Shiri Didos, we're singing a song of white wisdom of Yedidos. Now, the word Yedid could refer to David HaMelech, who is the Yedid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It could refer to Mashiach. It could refer to all Talmidei Chachamim, Hashem's love for us completely. It also could refer to Shlomo, who, listen, David HaMelech named his first kid Yedidya. There's a Shiloh, whether that name was used again for Shlomo Melech. But remember the kid that died? Right, the first kid of Batsheva that passed away. It seems to be Yedidya. Right? It could also be referred to a Chosin.
Maybe they didn't have a minute to match.
It's possible. Yeah, it's very possible. But Yedidya may have been the name of Shlomo Melech himself. Either regardless, we are the ones that are called by Shoshanim itself. We are loved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And B'nai Korach, in a way, could be like the roses plucked from the thorns. Korach and all of his band were thorns. And the B'nai Korach that survived were like the roses among the thorns themselves, because they had done tshuva and how they were able to get themselves out. It's interesting. Roses versus gold. Obviously, gold is more expensive, more chashuv. There's no question. You know, people would want gold more than roses. But on the other hand, roses are more accessible. Anybody can get a rose. And in that sense, right, although you might not be able to find a golden Jew, you'll be able to find a rose Jew. Somebody who smells good and does good things, right, in that way. Some say that if you would compare Chanoch to Moshe Rabbeinu, you'd see a major difference. That Chanoch was the one who took care of things on the side, but at the end of the day, never davened for his people, never made them any better. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu davened for everyone. He was like the rose among the thorns. So that's interesting, right? It is normally said Moshe versus Noach, not davening. Says right here,
Aaron versus Noach,
Chanoch walked with God, but he died too early. Moshe Rabbeinu died in his time, 120 altogether, right? But he left behind him a Malachas Kohen in the Goy Kadosh. So there's a difference between the two, how they went. So Chanoch was by himself. Noach also was by himself.
No, I heard that it was Noach versus Avram. Avram prayed for Sodom. He invited people in and tried to...
And that's that Rashi in the very beginning of Noach. Had he lived in the times of Avram, you know, right, he would have been like nothing, right? The Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's a very good call. Regardless, that's the idea behind it. So that's that. The more profound, the more profoundly you contemplate the Torah, that's like smelling a rose. You get more out of it. The more you smell the rose, the closer you get it to you, the more you see what it's referring to over here. Okay. That Rochash Libi Davar Toiv, my heart has murmured a very good thing. Omarani, Masal Melech, I said, my work is all for a king. Lishoni Eit Sofer Mahir. My tongue is like the pen of a very quick scribe. Right? And that's the idea behind it. So either this is Davar Melech writing poetry for King Mashiach, for the Mashiach when he comes over here, or it's referring to how I can write things down. My tongue was too quick to say it. I can only write down a little bit of what it does. Writing down definitely does help you remember something. You also can't retract something that you had in writing while saying something out loud. You could deny that it was said in the first place, right? And it also speaks about the four qualities of a speaker. Here's the four qualities. Number one, think about what you're going to say before you say it. Number two, be as brief as possible. You know that favorite story where, like, Rabbi, can you sum up your speech, your 45-minute speech? Can you sum it up in a few minutes? He said, yeah, be good to others. is like, then why didn't you do that? It's obvious, right? That's that. So think about what you're going to say. Be brief as possible. Number three, it should be pleasing to the listener's ears. And number four, it should be fluent and well-rehearsed. Those are the four signs, the qualities that a speaker should have over here. Obviously, a person should do Lashem Shemayim. Dovin Melech is doing this, you know, from Ruach HaKodesh itself. Masai Lamelech, I'm doing this for the king itself. Regardless, that's the idea behind it. What else we have over here? Torah Mitzvot. Yof Yofisa Mibnei Adam. Yof Yofisa. Wait, Yof Yofisa or Yof Yofisa?
I have...
Yop Yop Yisaw. I think there's a mistake. Yeah, the famous Shal Shelah song over here. Yop Yop Yisaw Mibnei Adam. Hutzachem B'Tzif Sosecha. You are fairer than the men of the children of Adam. Hutzachem B'Tzif Sosecha. Grace is poured upon your lips. Okay, Barach Elohim L'Olam. And therefore God blesses you forever. So first of all, before we get to anything, it's clear that Adam and Noach are mentioned in this pasuk. You're greater than Adam, you're greater than Noach. Adam is that first part of the pasuk. Chain is Noach, right? The same letters as Noach itself. You're greater than both of them, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed you forever, Moshe Rabbeinu, that you should be known as the person who gave the Torah. Hashem wanted to give the Torah through Adam. Couldn't happen. Hashem wanted to give the Torah through Noach and the sons of Noach, like Shem. Couldn't happen. So instead, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are better than all of them. 26 generations later, you're the one who we have to give it to. That's the idea behind it. There are 10 qualities of a king over here. All of them are hinted to in this passage. Number one, external beauty. Number two, strength and valor in war. Number three, wisdom. Number four, an ability to command warriors and for them to love him. Number five is noble birth, in other words, yichus. Number six, a love for mishpat, for justice. Number seven, excellent midos tovos. Number eight, raising a household of noble people, having good children. Number nine is other kings honor him because he's so great. And number ten, having sons that are worthy of replacing you on the throne itself. Those are the 10 qualities that a king must have, and they're all hinted to over these passages. Except Sukkim, some over here, some later, right? But that's the idea behind it. Others, Yop Yop Yis over here, could be referring to Mashiach or David HaMelech, that Mashiach is supposed to judge without agent, without witnesses. He's able to just all of a sudden, Morach Bevadoin, he's able to smell the Vadoin, as Yechezkel said. That's the idea behind it. Others say, Hutzachem B'Siv Sosecha means he has to have the gift of prophecy. These are two signs of what would refer to a Mashiach.
Judging?
In normal situations, yeah, yes. In Yemos HaMashiach, I think it's different. I don't know why it's different, but I do believe it's different by the Yemos HaMashiach, where everything can happen in a different way. Pretty sure that's what it's going to be over here. We do know that Yop Yop Yisum Ibn Adam is interesting because Rabbi Yeshua was once approached by the princess and said, "A clay, something beautiful, the Chli Mechor, in like an ugly vessel." He said, "Rabbi Yeshua, you're an ugly man, but the Torah is so beautiful. How could beautiful Torah be in your ugly vessel?" To which he said back, right? This is a Gemara in Chagig and Dafe. He said back, he said, "Where does your father put all of his wine?" He said, "Where does he put his wine?" He puts his wine in, you know, clay vessels. He said, "Clay, that's so ugly. You should put it in gold. Why isn't it in gold?" Right? To which she said, "We're going to do that." So he put it into gold, and obviously what happened to the wine? It all fermented. Because gold does not hold wine well. And if gold doesn't hold wine well, that's not what you're supposed to have. So for that reason, right, there's no way that Mashiach is supposed to be something that's a little bit different. He'll be beautiful and yet still have the wisdom that he needs to have. That quality of being ugly and better at Torah will not need to be done by something like him. But that's what it says. Oh, because that's what they asked Rabbi Yeshua. They said, "But there are good-looking people who know how to learn." I said, if they were uglier, they'd be able to learn better. That's the line that they used for it. Okay, that is that. Yep. Ah, here it is. Yeah, you also, you have to be something bnei adam. Don't go around telling people, "I'm beautiful." Let other people say that you're beautiful. That's the idea behind it. Don't try to elicit their praise from somebody else. Chagor charbachol yareich. Gird your sword upon your thigh. Gibor hotcha varecha. Almighty One, that is your splendor and your beauty. That's Mashiach's fight against Gog. That shows how great he is. Vador chatzlach rechav. And your beauty will ride upon and be matzliach. Adavar emes v'amot tzedek. And the truth and humility and righteousness of Zorcha. And teachings, Naros v'necha. Your right hand will do awesome things, right? So again, when you trample them, try not to do it with a haughty heart. Don't try try to knock down anybody else. Look for the truth. Try to find real anivos, right? And accept what other people do and admit when the truth comes in front of you, right? Admit to that truth and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding you and telling you to do. Your arrows are sharpened. And the nations will fall beneath you. In the hearts of the enemies of the king itself. You have to be eager to do whatever it needs to do and make sure things work. This is all referring to Mashiach. But your throne of God will be forever and ever. Shevet Mishor, it will be the scepter of Mishor, straightness. Shevet Malchusach will be the scepter of your kingdom, right? That's what's going to happen over there. Either it's going to be he's going to know the rules that it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself, or it's going to be the seal of good from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's seal from back then. You love tzedek, righteousness. You hate evil. Therefore, you are anointed by God, your God. This happy oil over all of your friends and all of your fellows. Right, that's the idea. You're rewarded by getting the Shemen HaMishkal. That's what ends up happening. I always thought, but I'm not positive I'm right about this, there is no such person as Mashiach. That's not his name, right? Mashiach just means the anointed one. That anybody could be zochet to this. They just have to follow what it says over here. That if you do what David HaMelech says you're supposed to do as Mashiach, then maybe you could gain the level of being Mashiach. That it doesn't have to be a separate person whose name is Mashiach. Because otherwise, every parent should name their kids Mashiach to try to come out with such a person. But that's the idea behind it. I'm sorry? No, his name's not supposed to be David Dove. Right? Enon or what else is it? I forgot what the other ones are.
Okay.
Menachem and a couple others. I understood you, dude. But no, what's it called? Menachem and who's the other name? I forgot what it was. All right, new. But that's that. And that is that. Right. And Shlomo Melech, he actually got his kingdom, right? He got everything because he wanted tzedek. He wanted to judge wisely as opposed to taking all the money that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered him. That's the idea behind it. A son does not get anointed from his father. It should happen automatically. More balos ketzios kol bigdoseko. So there's myrrh, right? And aloes. Ketzios is cassia. Now, I don't have great words, but myrrh, Rav Haigon says, is resin of the tree and has a nice aroma. Aloe is a spice called sanbol in Arabic. I don't think it refers to the aloe vera plant that we have. I don't think so. It says the sanbol. Cassia is called imber. Imber, I-N-B-E-R over here. They're supposed to make something which is beautiful. It expands the heart when it's like that, and that's that. The Balamor writes that the tree, all myrrh, is nowhere to be found except in the Garden of Eden. That real myrrh does not exist in our world. That the more that we have in our world is not the same. The wind breaks off its branches, casts them into the river Pisa that comes out again in itself. We don't. In other words, that's that. How do we know what we think it is? We think it's what the Arabs call myrrh, right? Which we've had all the time.
Take myrrh. Okay, but obviously he's referring to the myrrh that we have. It can't be referring to some
magical myrrh. Well, it could, because you remember the Shemen HaMishkal, which was created by Moshe Rabbeinu, which supposedly never ran out.
Or it though has myrrh in it.
It might have been, well, the...
Number five. Is
it? More, it is.
Yeah,
more of those. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. How would the Balmor explain that? See, with the Shemen HaMishkal, you could say that it just lasted through, right? Because
well,
it never ended.
Only one, right.
Yeah. Maybe the first myrrh plant, according to this Balmor, came from Gan Eden, but there was none naturally in this world. And that all myrrh comes from that. All myrrh stems from that. I don't know. Same way there would be something like that. Either way, regardless, that is that the royal robes that a king has to wear, right, is something that should be for beauty that shows, but it should be more than that. It shouldn't just be that you have the clothing of a konga or whatever it is. It should be that you have the good deeds. The aroma over here is the good deeds of a great tzaddik and fine character traits. That's the idea behind it. The concept. It says, Yod benos melachim bikrotzecha, the daughters of kings are among your favorites. You put the queen to your side, and you cover her with gold. Only a Bas Yisrael. You're not going to take the queen of other nations. You want a Bas Yisrael, but the princesses of other nations will come to you.
Yeah, but Shegal is an interesting term for the queen. It's not referring to
concubine,
like,
really.
Yeah.
That's really the word that we use. It's the one that you sleep with, is that idea, right? Mitzvah Shegal Amincha. That's the Gemara Roshan in the very first parak. Shiva Basu Rehi Bas Yaznech. Listen, O daughter, and see, incline your ear. You should forget your nation and the house of your father. Now, this obviously refers refers to a girl who's coming from other nations to join Klal Yisrael by marrying into the king or Mashiach, etc., but it also refers to Klal Yisrael themselves. Remove yourself from Olam Hazeh. Listen to me, B'nai Yisrael. Turn your ear to me. Forget your people and your father's house. Means forget the taivas of this world. Forget your gaiva, your azus, matzach that you might have. Yisav HaMelech Yafiech. Then the king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will desire your beauty, or the king Mashiach. Ki Adonai he is your master. Yisach Lilo, you should bow down to him. Right? Very similar to Shir HaShirim. These couple psukim seem to be very similar to Shir HaShirim, how we're describing it and using it from one to the other. The feeling has to be mutual. Here, Abbas Tzor, the daughter of Tzor, they will entreat your face with a gift. Ashiriyam, the wealthiest of the people themselves. That's what the Mashiach will end up being. Kol Kavud HaBas Malchnima, all the glory of the daughter of the king will be within. Her clothing should be made of gold in settings, right? In the different settings around. And again, once again, the kavod of a bas melech pnima is what we say is when a person is supposed to be tsnua, that a woman has to realize that she is not the master, so to speak, and do whatever she wants to do, that she is still the husband's wife. And she has to understand her role in that way. And although that sometimes can be considered more sexist, especially in our type of society, right, it is for the betterment of not only, you know, other people, but especially herself. She's no longer looked at as that type of an object. She's looked at as something special, as opposed to, you know, for what her looks are. And that's Bas Melech Pnima, to be able to show her manners and her midos, rather than just show off her beauty or her body, so to speak. That's the concept of how tznias should work. With embroidery is brought over to the king, Besulos Achareha, right? And then the Besulos come afterward, Reosam Uvozlach, and even her friends get to come with her. Once this girl gets to be decided as the queen, like a Queen Esther, so to speak, she brings in whoever she wants. Whoever she wants to come into the kingdom gets to come with her. She has friends, etc. And if this nation of the world that decides to join Mashiach, or these Jews that come through, you can pull in other people with it. Others come with it, even if they don't deserve it. Because simply put, they're doing the right thing. Tuvana Bismach was a deal, they'll be led in with gladness and rejoicing. They're going to go in to the king's palace itself. They're going to pay him homage. And instead of your fathers, you're going to have children. They will be made princes throughout the entire land. And that's the idea of inheriting the throne, that David Melech is inheriting that throne to his sons after him. I'm going to remember your name in every generation. Therefore, the nations will praise you forever and ever. And that's the idea, that everybody will know this name. And that's the concept. Again, it's Dor Dorim. We've mentioned this before, but Elon, Elon, Bamabarecha. How should I bless you, O tree? You have everything that you need. You have a brook of water. You have shade. You have everything. The answer is that all of your netios should note in Yukamoscha, that all of your children should be the same way. So David Melech is being praised, praising people, or at least Mashiach, that it should be done forever and ever, that all of the children, all of the future generations should have this chus to be able to have these great things over here. Okay, Shkoyach, everybody, we'll stop with that. We did.